Well, hello and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John Mark Grody, here on EWTN, and we're great to be back with you for another story, a story of conversion, how the Lord is working in our lives, how He brings us home to Him and His church. And we're joined tonight by Alicia Baker, a revert to the Catholic faith. She makes Catholic items for Etsy and is on Instagram at noheartuntouched@gmail.com. Check it out there. Alicia, so thanks for joining us this evening.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Been looking forward to speaking for a while. We follow some of your stuff on the internet. It's very edifying, and you've got a lot of neat stuff that you're making there. So,
thank you.
But I'm excited to hear your story. Yeah. So take us back. Where does it all begin for you?
Well, I think it really begins when how I grew up. I really wasn't catechized because my own parents weren't catechized.
As Catholics.
Correct. Yeah. We were very culturally Catholic. Mm. Being of Hispanic descent, I felt like it was always everywhere, you know, Our Lady of Guadalupe, rosaries, and making sure everybody had their sacraments, but it wasn't an actual living the faith. Mm. And then, you know, like I said, and then also passing it down, you know, the beautiful teachings of the church and everything. It just wasn't fully there. And I, you know, my parents weren't catechized themselves, so it was kind of hard, you know, to pass that on to your own children.
Sure. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Findlay, Ohio.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So right there. Yeah.
Yes. So I think it just, a lot of it stemmed from that. Just kind of growing up with not a lot of those core beliefs, those, like I said, those teachings, those morals, you know, right from the get-go. And so I formed, you know, a lot of my own opinions and a lot of my own beliefs, you know, about, I believed in God. Sure. And I went to CCD and, you know, like I said, made my sacraments. And but it was more of like checking things off the list, you know, like, oh, we got to get, you know, our girls to, at the time it was just me and my sister, we got to get the girls, you know, their sacraments done and make sure. But I mean, we never went to Mass on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it was just very cultural and kind of, you know, picking here and there what we wanted to do.
Sure.
So I think a lot of that stems from that. Now, my dad did have a reversion when I was, I think, about in middle school. So that did change quite a lot. But like I said, at that point, I had already formed, you know, a lot of my own opinions. And I think it was about 13 or 14 when that happened. And so that was big for him. Mm-hmm. And so it affected all of us, obviously. Yeah. But like I said, unfortunately, I had already had a lot of my own opinions and beliefs and whatnot. And then fast forward several years. So while I did take my faith a little bit more seriously, I really didn't understand, you know, why these were the teachings of the church, you know, understanding that Jesus is fully present in the Eucharist and that, you know, he specifically was, you know, died on the cross, not just for all of us, but specifically for me and for you you know, each individual person. I never really grasped that at all. And so I kind of just grew up and became a young adult and would just kind of surrounded myself with not necessarily the best people. Like I said, in that mindset, I mean, I was friends with other Catholics, but like I said, again, it was more of by name and by, like I said, checking things off the list.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, like I said, truly understanding and believing everything that, you know, the church teaches. So unfortunately I didn't have, like I said, the best influences. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up moving out. I think, I was like in my early 20s. Moved out, and I feel like that was probably a recipe for disaster at that point, because I was living, at that point when I moved out, I was living the typical, you know, college. I was taking a few college courses, but I was mostly working full time. And so, like I said, total, you know, typical college experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, going out all the time or, you know, having parties, you know, at my new apartment with my new roommate and just like I said, just not really the best environment and definitely not fostering, you know, the faith because that just, like I said, wasn't a priority.
We're joined tonight by Alicia Baker, a revert to the Catholic faith. You know, I'm thinking, as you're relaying your story here, Alicia, how, you know, when we were surrounded by cultural Catholicism, mm-hmm. there's a lot of good seeds planted there, mm-hmm. certainly,
right.
you know, the
right.
and it's a generally positive, but one thing that can be missed, right, is mm-hmm. this, the sense of the personal relevance.
Right.
Like what difference does this make in my life?
Right.
You know, and if we have a basically good childhood, we're basically mm-hmm. positive. It really doesn't sometimes come till later that, well, what's the crisis? Does that kind of ring with your experience?
Yeah, I feel like it was definitely, like you said, it wasn't personal.
Yeah.
It didn't click with me personally yet. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, like you said, it was just general and those seeds were planted, mm-hmm. but it wasn't a full understanding.
What did you think about sin at this point in your life? Because again, as what we would say with the gospel is, right, the gospel comes as a remedy to the problem of sin, but the question is whether a person actually thinks that that's a problem.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So sin, I mean, I really didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't understand what that meant. Like I said, as far as catechesis, there was, my parents were playing catch up big time.
Sure.
So, I didn't understand that. I didn't understand, sin and the repercussions of sin mm-hmm. and, the confessional. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand any of that. That was not not on my mind, for every act, kind of, like we're taught in general, for every action, there's a consequence. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely not, those two were not connecting
right.
at that time.
Right.
So like I said, just living, in that kind of environment didn't really help. It didn't help foster my faith or, really, help me go deeper in understanding, those things. So just, unfortunately, from being in that kind of environment, I felt like it just kind of, I exposed myself to a lot of things that were not good. I put myself in situations that, like, I should not have been in. And, not just for my soul, but just, physically, as a young woman, just going to parties and, not being around people I'd never been with before and just, like I said, drinking and not making good decisions. And like I said, just common sense wise, that was not a good choice, being, like I said, in an environment where I don't know people and just not being safe, in general.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, because of those situations and me thinking that this was normal, and that I wasn't, sinning in any way.
Right.
I unfortunately put myself in a terrible situation, and we were out of town. We decided to go to a party out of town, and I was with my roommate and a couple of other friends, and like I said, it just was not good common sense. I should have never been in this situation in the first place. So unfortunately, I ended up being sexually assaulted, and I really didn't realize what had happened until the next morning. And unfortunately, it was just a very, very weird situation. Everybody had left me. So like I said, we drove out of town to this party and everybody had left me, a vehicle, everything. So I was literally just by myself. I mean, it was a bizarre, crazy, situation. And I just tried to, get myself out of that situation and get back home. And I felt like after it happened, honestly, I feel like maybe something was put in my drink, because it wasn't until later that I realized certain parts, and remembered certain things. But as far as coping with it in that situation and then in that moment with those people that I went with and, living with my roommate and stuff, I really made light of it. In front of them, I made light of the situation. And because I remembered some of those things, it was kind of looked at as like, oh, you were just really drunk. You made that choice. And it's, what you wanted to do. And really, it wasn't. And, but like I said, to cope with it, I kind of just, you know, like I said, I felt like at that point, nobody really believed me anyways. So, you know, I might as well just go along with what everybody else thought. But deep down inside, I mean, it was horrible. I mean, it was absolutely horrible. When I was 15 and I had a quinceañera. And so, like I said, culturally again, you know, I had a quinceañera mass and everything. And I had a chastity ring. And at that point, like I said, I really didn't understand what that totally meant. But it was something important to me. And I knew that I was going to keep that promise. Well, then when that happened, I was just destroyed. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I said, in front of other people, I tried to pass it off as, okay, yeah, I remember these things. You know, okay, maybe I did, you know, make that choice. Maybe I did do that. But, you know, when I thought about it deep down inside, I did not consent to any of that. Yeah. And so from that moment, I mean, it was a pretty destructive path that I set myself on. And, you know, like I said, it was inside. It was really hard for me to wrap my mind around it and to understand, because I felt like, you know, because I had made, even though I didn't fully understand the chastity ring and what that meant, I felt like I was betrayed by God. I felt like, you know, where were you? You know, why didn't you protect me? Why didn't you help me? Why was I in that situation in the first place? A lot of it was on him and not on me, how the decisions I made kind of, you know, led me to that point. So yeah, it was just really hard. I mean, I think that was the only time in my whole life that I felt like I just wanted to die. Like, I just did not want to go on. I didn't want to talk to my parents. I didn't want to talk to my sister, you know, like at the time. I did have little brothers at the time. But I didn't want to, you know, be around my family. And my mom picked up on that. You know, she was like, you know, what's going on with you? I don't, you know, we don't call me. You don't text me. You know, what's going on? And I always made some kind of excuse, you know, that, to just, you know, like I said, distance myself from them, because I felt like she would know. You know, your mom knows you best. You know, she knows what's going on. Moms always know what's going on or that there's something wrong. So that was really hard for me for a while, because like I said, I just really had to distance myself. I did not want to be with any of my family members or anything like that. So I just remember, I think it was the following weekend, going to Mass, and just having flashbacks almost. And then I felt worse, because I was just like, why am I remembering these things? Why is it happening during Mass out of all places? And it was just really hard for me. And then, like, it was just a really bizarre situation. Like I said, my friends had felt betrayed, and I honestly, now I don't remember why. But it was just like, I felt like I'd been betrayed on all sides. Like I said, you know, my friends weren't really talking to me. I felt betrayed by God. I felt alone. You know, I felt like I really didn't have anybody to go to be there for me. And when I did finally tell my mom, I mean, of course, she was really understanding and helped me out and whatnot. But I was just like, don't tell my dad. I feel like this is, you know, this is gonna be really upsetting for him to hear. But thanks be to God, she, you know, like I said, got me through it. And I felt like I did receive some healing. But it wasn't a full healing, because at that point I was starting to fill my life with other things, because like I said, I did feel so betrayed by God. I just felt kind of damaged, and I felt, unworthy. I felt unclean. I felt just kind of like pretty much like garbage. I just felt totally worthless is what I felt like. And like I said, at that time, I really didn't understand that, you know, Jesus was there for me this whole time through everything. So from that point, because of that incident, I went through my life just totally indulging myself into the party lifestyle, into, you know, unchaste relationships, and to substance abuse. Like I said, it was just a very destructive, not good path. And I feel like the whole time I was really searching for Jesus. Absolutely. I was really searching for his love. I was filling myself with these other forms of love, you know, that I thought was true love and was real love. And, you know, all my friends were living this lifestyle. So what's really wrong with it? You know, that's what I was telling myself, or that's the lies that Satan was telling me that I was trying to convince myself of. So yeah, it was just a really long path of, like I said, that destructive lifestyle, not realizing, you know, that Jesus was waiting for me, not going to confession, because like I said, I really didn't understand and really didn't think, well, there's, you know, lots of people who live like this, and there are Catholics who live like this, you know, like, it's not really, you know, wrong. And then, like I said, just not having the those types of solid, faith-filled friendships to kind of help me and be like, you know, what's going on with you? You know, what's really happening here?
There's a word that you mentioned earlier I wanted to just ask about a little bit, because it seems to bear on, you know, again, what happens and then the ways that we cope with it and deal with it going afterwards. And it's interesting, you know, your friends, you mentioned that there was this concern at the beginning in the aftermath talking about consent, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting, like the world now divides the world between consent and non-consent, as if that's the only metric for whether something is good or not. And that leaves us in this place where, well, as long as I'm consenting to things, alcohol, whatever it is, it can't be that bad. But that's not what we're made. Like, we know that that doesn't fit with the kind of being that I am. That can't be all that it's about.
Yeah, and I feel like I said, just from being in that environment, it was just not, like you said, because you think it's okay, and okay, well, yeah, you did choose that, and everything's fine, and everything is okay, and it's like, it's really not. Like I said, nobody was really in the full realization of how, you know, what what life could really be like.
What you're made for.
So, so like I said, unfortunately, I lived that way for several years, and just like I said, just kind of felt really empty, and nothing was really fulfilling. You know, my relationship with my parents was kind of rocky. I remember a couple of times, you know, my mom, you know, talking to me about on the phone about, you know, a particular guy, and, you know, she was really concerned and, you know, thought, you know, this is not going to be good. And, you know, like I said, I feel like she knew what was going on with me, but like I said, I just was trying to keep everything hush hush and secretive, and just like I said, on that path of sorrow, really, is what it was. And just not really seeking the help that I should have. So yeah, that went on for several years, like I said. And I can't remember. I think there came to a point in time where, like I said, there had been kind of relationships or you know whatnot that I had been through, and I was really, like I said, looking for love. I didn't understand the kind of love that I was looking for, though. And so I was questioning, you know, why is this always falling apart? Why is there so much drama? Why is there, why do I feel like anxiety, you know, worrying about, you know, certain things? Or, and like I said, again, I was just searching for that love of Jesus that I didn't, you know, put those two things together. And so it took a while for me, like I said, to come to that point. And once I did, it was like one of the last times, it was actually before I got on Catholic Match and had my reversion. But I was talking to this man and I, you know, was really hoping, okay, maybe this could be it. Maybe this could be a good relationship. And there was all kind of miscommunications and everything completely fell apart. And I remember thinking, I'm so tired of this. I'm so tired of like this happening to me. You know, why is it always happening to me? you know, why can't I ever find that love that I'm looking for? And I had went out that night and got home and was just like, you know, intoxicated and went to sleep. And then I woke up really early the next morning and I just, something clicked. Like something was just like, I'm so tired. I'm just really tired of this. Like this is just old and I feel like I'm not getting anywhere. And I, you know, nothing good is coming from any of these situations and it's not fruitful. And I don't know what else to do other than to just turn to God. So it was a little bit before I, you know, went to confession, but I started reading more and asking my dad all kinds of questions because I thought, like I said, because he had a reversion, he was like a catechism. Like I just, all I had to do was ask him a question and, yeah, you know, yeah, he knew, or he was like, how, you know, here's this book or here's, you know, what I read about this or, and whatnot. So, eventually I did go to confession. And like I said, at this point, I feel like I had some healing, and thanks be to God. But it wasn't until years later that I feel like I received the rest of my healing. Right. But yeah, so then my, you know, like I said, my dad was an open book and he really helped me get onto that path of coming back home and realizing that love and mercy that was waiting for me. And I feel like once I finally realized all the lies that I had been thinking of, like, that I was worthless, that I was unclean, that it was too late, you know, that I couldn't come back, that I was damaged, you know, all those lies of the enemy that I had believed for so long. Once I realized, like I said, that God loved me as an individual, that on the cross, he saw me, that was when I, like, everything was just like, it was just a full realization of like, oh my goodness, what have I been doing? Yeah. what kind of life have I been living? But I think that's the one thing I always think about, you know, and I have people reach out to me on my social media or whatever. I'm always encouraging people to go to confession.
Yeah.
But I'm always saying, you know, nobody is ever too far away. Like, that's right. One of the biggest, I think, lies that the enemy tries to tell you is that we're never too far away.
Yeah. You mentioned about sin being boring, right? And I think another sort of like subtle lie in all this, right, is that I think sometimes when the gospel is presented to us, we tend to think of the people who need help from Jesus. Those people out there, like the really mean people, like the really bad people, right? And we can kind of like, we can interpret sin in this very narrow sense of like the really evil maliciousness that some people out there do.
Yeah.
But we can also interpret it much more broadly in the sense of like all the wounds, all the lies that I have, right?
Yes.
Even, again, I talked about the monotony, even just the patterns that I'm enslaved to that I can't get out of, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was very much like that song where I think it talks about Jesus being like a chain breaker, breaking those chains.
Yeah.
And another song I always think of is that Reckless Love.
Oh, by I love Cor- that song.
That really, I mean, like years later, you know, obviously hearing that song, I was like, oh my goodness, like that's what I felt like. I felt like once I realized how much he loved me as an individual person and all this truth that was waiting for me here. You know, I was believing all these lies for so many years and there was all this truth that I didn't even know.
Right.
And, once that came into realization, I mean, it was just a whole different world. I mean, like I said, it did take some time and learning and recatechizing and, I mean, even now, I mean, I'm, you know, a wife and a mother now, and I feel like I'm constantly learning new things and teaching my own children. But it was a crazy realization. Like I said, that's one thing I always want to try to reiterate to people is that, you know, you're never too far away. You know, the enemy is always going to try to convince you that you're too far gone. You've made too many mistakes. You are damaged goods, you know, and it'd just be better off if you just kept living the way that you lived, because you can't change it. So you might as well just stay that way.
Let's take a little break, and then we'll come back and talk more about, you know, the continuing journey and how it all played out there. We really appreciate your story so far. And again, we'll be back in just a few minutes. We're joined tonight by Alicia Baker. She's a revert to the Catholic faith, and you can find her Catholic goods on an Etsy, and she's also on Instagram at noheartuntouched@gmail.com. We'll see you in a minute. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're in the second half of the hour today. Tonight we're speaking with Alicia Baker. She's a revert to the Catholic faith, and she has goods on Etsy and on Instagram. You can check her out there. But great story so far, Alicia. Thanks for sharing us. You know, some tough stuff, and there's some tough experiences. Mm-hmm. But when we left off, you know, we're talking a little bit about this, I think an important topic, you know, for people to think about today, which is just, I think one of the subtle lies the devil tells us is that me and my feelings and my problems and my loneliness or whatever is all the brokenness that the gospel isn't for me. It's for like those other sinners or the people who have real problems, you know, and it takes us a while to really say, oh no, this is Christ came to love me.
Right. Well, and I think also there's the opposite of that too, where it's like you think, oh, those people have made good choices their whole life. You know, I can't do that. It's too late for me.
Right.
And I feel like that was definitely the mentality that I thought of. I think I went through both, but I feel like what really was holding me back was that latter part of thinking it's just too late for me.
They play into each other, those two.
Yes.
Swinging between those.
Yes. Yeah. So, going to the point of like, well, you know, those people would never accept me and I could never, you know, live that kind of life. And that's, you know, they're all holier than thou to being like, well, I can't. It's, you know, I you know, I didn't grow up like that. I didn't live like that. I don't know what that life is about. And so, yeah, I think that was definitely the last part that held me back for a while, was just thinking that it was too late and that everybody else was better than I was. And that, you know, like I said, only learning about and knowing certain things of like, you know, looking, you know, at the church and seeing all these saints and being like, oh, you know, they lived awesome, holy, perfect lives, you know, not really understanding, you know, there are those stories of the saints. You know, like I said, St. Augustine.
Yeah, talk to us about him.
Oh, my goodness. I think really learning about St. Augustine literally gave me so much hope. And, you know, knowing that, like, his story always is just so mind-blowing to me. And, you know, that he's, you know, where he is in the church and the doctor of the church. And I mean, it's just like, it's crazy to me. And then of course his mother, I mean, that just, it just is so mind blowing to me that, you know, somebody who made all those different mistakes and lived that kind of crazy life.
A restless heart.
Yes. Yeah. That really, I think resonated with me. Cause like I said, this whole time, I really do feel like, you know, I was searching for that love and I was restless. I had a restless heart. Yeah. That was in pursuit of that, but I didn't understand it in that way.
Right.
So, and I always make sure to tell my kids that too, you know, the stories of the saints, the different lives that they had, because, and I always, like I said, reiterate to them, no one is too far away. Look at this saint, you know, look what they went through and look at this saint, you know, they lived a totally different life. And, I really try to, like I said, hit that home with them so they understand too, like, you know, if they ever go through anything challenging in their life, that they'll always realize that nothing is, you know, they're never too far away from him.
It gets at the communal nature of the faith. You know, faith comes by hearing. You know, we receive the gospel through other people's as witness their lives, the saints, as well as other people. You know, you'd mentioned before the break that as you start this searching process, now asking, now kind of really, you know, admitting that you want to to move toward God. Mm-hmm. You began to talk, you know, pick your dad's brain a little bit. Tell us a little bit, you know, what prompted his reversion to the faith? What was that about?
Honestly, I feel like my dad kind of had a restless heart too. He grew up in kind of a chaotic home. Again, faith was a cultural thing.
Sure.
You know, checking things off the list, sacraments or, you know, sacramentals, you know, having those kinds of things in the home, but it wasn't really anything of substance. And so that was, again, like I said, how my childhood started. Well, eventually, I know my mom, you know, they say now that, you know, they probably would have gotten divorced if he wouldn't have had his reversion. There was a lot of, you know, arguing and just, you know, things were very unsettled in their relationship. So I know for years she had prayed, you know, like, I need help. And like I said, she grew up in a good family, but again, culturally Catholic. But that seed was planted there to at least, you know, when you need something, not all the time, but when you need something, you know, take it to God and see, you know, what he says and how he answers you. Well, his answer was a full reversion that my dad went through. And I know she even said herself, she was like, you know, I prayed for years for help. You know, I wanted change. I wanted, you know, things to change in our marriage, things to change, you know, in his habits and, you know, and how he handled things. But she didn't expect it in that way. So it was even like a reversion for her too, because, you know, like I said, all of us, there was big change in everybody, at that point. So,
wow, again, so many topics, you know, that we'll break out into, but one is just like, in the beginning, I think it's connected with that restlessness that sometimes I think another battle we wrestle with the faith is not really asking God for what we really want, right? Like, I really want to be happy. I really want, like, to have a good marriage and a happy family. And sometimes it's finally when we finally come to the point of like, God, I just want to be happy. God's like, okay, now roll up my sleeves here.
But I think also too, like letting him, you know, I feel like we have in our mind, yes, God, I want to be happy, but I want it in this way.
Right.
And God's like, I'm going to do it the best way because I know best. And so, being open to that, I think I remember my mom saying that too. Like she wasn't expecting, she was like, you know, he's coming home and you know, doing all this research online and reading the catechism and telling me this is what we're supposed to be doing. Did you know this? So I know for her it was, you know, an overwhelming, you know, time too, of just, like you said, you expect, okay, I want a happy marriage. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize this is going to entail all these other details, and really change, I mean, our entire future. I mean, I don't know where I would be. Right. If my dad wouldn't have had that reversion, because, I mean, at least at that point, like I said, I had formed my own opinions and beliefs, but those seeds were planted at that point.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know if I would be where I am right now.
Yeah. Well, then at the crucial moment, then he was able to be there to be in answering questions and disciple you.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. Okay. So what happened then? So you're beginning to ask these questions. You're beginning to kind of move back in that direction.
So I started to take things more seriously. Like I said, learning, researching, going to confession, realizing what a gift confession is. I think, unfortunately, a lot of us grew up scared of the confessional.
Right.
And really, it's such a huge gift. It's, you know, it's amazing. You know, once we let go of those burdens and those worries and those doubts and those fears, and really let God's love and mercy flow and his grace come upon us. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it still gets me. That's, you said, I've received a lot of healing. Thanks be to God, over everything. But what things still makes me emotional is thinking about his love and mercy, thinking about, you know, how far away I was. And yet the whole time he was just waiting for me. He was waiting for me to pursue, you know, his love for me and my love for him. So, just after going back to the confessional, researching, finding out the teachings of the faith and the lives of the saints, I think were really comforting and really helped me. And at that point, I tried to get more serious, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to worry about God. Mm. I'm going to pursue him, because that's who I should have been pursuing this whole time.
Yeah.
And I feel like also like letting go, letting him work, you know, like I said, I feel like I had a lot of, I was like, okay, you know, I feel like I'm back, you know, I'm ready for, you know, whatever you have for me, but I still had in the back of my mind, I would like it this way, you know, like I want it to happen this way. And I still had to let go and be like, okay, what do you have planned for me? You know, allow him to work. And so eventually I got on, because like I said, I feel like I was really in the pursuit of love, and I did pursue Jesus, and that's all I worried about for a while. And eventually though, I had always felt the call that I wanted to be a wife and a mother. And so this time I was like, okay, I'm serious about it. I don't want somebody who's not Catholic. You know, I want somebody who's Catholic, who knows their faith, who is serious about their faith. And so, like I said, I grew up in Findlay, Ohio, and I don't know, I feel like there wasn't a lot of youth at the parish. There wasn't a lot of people my age that I really knew. And like I said, getting back into the faith and not growing up with that community, I was kind of searching for, you know, people my age and whatnot. So I got on Catholic Match, and I actually had one relationship before I met my husband. But once I met my husband, that's, I feel like it was the rest of the healing that I needed. Mm. God was showing me his love through my husband. And he really showed me what true love, you know, true love was possible. That, you know, the love that he had waiting for me this whole time was way better than I could have ever imagined. And which it was hard at first, because then I felt bad, you know, about my past life and the things that I had done. And so it did take, you know, a little bit to kind of not fall prey to those thoughts, you know, to really believe in, you know, this is the plan that he had for me. You know, my husband was waiting for me, and to not go back into that mindset of, you know, wanting to be like, I'm unworthy, you know, to pursue this relationship, to pursue this kind of love. And so that did take a little bit on me. But like I said, once I realized that, you know, this was his plan, and this is what he had meant for me this whole time. I mean, it was, once I realized it was a gift, and it was kind of a surreal time too. I felt like, cause like I said, when I did have my quinceañera, my parents were like, you need to be praying for your future husband. And so I did go through a period of, like I said, I didn't fully understand what all that completely meant, but, you know, I would pray for him, and, you know, and every now and again, and once I did meet him and everything I understood, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is what I was waiting for. Like, this is what I could have had if I would have, you know, realized, or, you know, like I said, went in pursuit of that true love through Jesus. And, you know, his plans are, like I said, always the best. And this is what was waiting for me.
Yeah.
And so through that relationship, like I said, I really realized that love that he had planned for me the whole time. And so once we met, we were, I think, engaged for 6 weeks. or I'm sorry, no. We were together for 6 weeks, and he had proposed. And then we were married 6 months later. So we were just at that point in our lives, we were like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what we've been waiting for. We both were like that. So we were just like, let's get started. We want to start that life right away. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like everything, you know, my faith encompasses everything. And it's so crazy to me, because before it was like the opposite. It was kind of like, you know, there in the background, where now it's like in the forefront.
Right.
And it's, encompasses everything that I do, all the choices that I make, you know, how we live our lives on a day-to-day basis. You know, like I said, even the choices of my children, you know, mm-hmm. we homeschool, we do Catholic curriculum. I have a Catholic business. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm so passionate about it that it encompasses every single thing in my life.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, the finding additional healing in that vocation, the vocation of marriage, mm-hmm. and right? And again, as Catholics, we take it very seriously. Marriage is a sacrament.
Yes.
It's a means of grace.
Yes.
And it's, you talk about the kind of the all-encompassing nature of the faith. When we begin to walk with God again, we realize that, oh, he works through everything.
Yes.
For our healing and for our good.
Yes.
Right?
And like through that hurt, you know, like I said, that he was still there the whole time. And instead of me blaming him, you know, I could have been, you know, like I said, pursuing him and taking a little bit of responsibility myself mm-hmm. of, you know, like I said, surrounding, not always making the best choices, and realizing, you know, that he was there the whole time waiting for me, and that through the hurt, you know, there is healing, and yeah, just allowing that grace to flow and to pursue him.
Yeah. Wonderful, Alicia. Well, let's circle back around to a few things, you know, a few topics that might be, you know, of interest, of relevance to other people, wherever they are in their particular journey. And one I was thinking of, and we touched on it briefly earlier, but it's very easy to get this sense in the faith that when we talk about morality, we talk about sin, morality, that it's just a bunch of like what not to do, mm-hmm. right? You know,
yes.
So you mentioned chastity earlier, that it's just the thou shalt nots, right?
Yes.
But the Catholic vision is not a negative vision, it's a positive vision.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that.
I feel like that was definitely a missing component. I feel like I didn't understand that. And it was more of like, no, mm-hmm. you know, don't do this, don't do that. And when we did start learning stuff, and so that I questioned, I feel like, a lot of it, because I was like, why, you know, well, why is this and why is that? And more of like you said, it's not just about saying no, it's about God allows it. And he has a beautiful plan for it in the way that he has it for, like you said, the way that he plans it for us.
Yeah.
It's not just saying no.
Right.
It's that he has it designed perfectly. Mm-hmm. And if we follow that, everything, you know, like you said, all the graces and beauty that flows from that can be, you know, very beautiful and abundant.
Yeah. And that's true for marriage and sexuality. It's even true for other things that you mentioned along the way, you know. Even things like alcohol or parties or things like
yes.
Okay, you know, there's a no to those things that are destructive, but it's precisely because there's to be a greater yes to
right.
what God created us for. We're made for heaven. We're mm-hmm. made for the party. We're made for the Sabbath.
Yes.
But we have all these ways of trying to go after happiness, go after peace, go after love in ways that are
yes.
destructive, right?
Yeah, and I feel like I always think of that quote by Pope John Paul II, where he says, you know, we're really pursuing, I can't remember how he words it, but when we pursue all these other things, we're really in pursuit of God.
Exactly.
We're filling our lives with all these other things, and we're really searching for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's unfortunate, you know, like, I mean, it's in the providence of the thing, in the nature of things that some of us have to go discover that mm-hmm. we can't find the happiness our own to come
yes.
back around. But that's the thing that we tell to our kids, right? Like this, please don't learn the mistakes experientially. Learn from
yes,
my example.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, only Christ will lead you to true happiness.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I have younger brothers. One is 17 and the other one's 12. And so, I definitely, especially like I said, the one who's 17, mm-hmm. you know, my sister and I both try to say, you know, like, God has the best plan if you just trust him and be patient. I know it's hard. It's not easy. But he really does. If you pursue him, you know, and that's what I definitely felt like once I started pursuing him, everything that my heart ever desired, just all the cards just fell into place.
Yeah.
You know, finding my husband, getting married, having, you know, a loving, beautiful marriage, having beautiful children, rediscovering my faith, you know, the sacraments and everything was just, like I said, this gift that was waiting for me.
Yeah.
And I almost didn't see it because of the lies the enemy was trying to convince me of.
Yeah. Talk, if you would, for a moment to those, especially young people who, you know, whether because of experiences they've had or mistakes that they've made, they are afraid to, again, reapproach family or the faith. You know, that there's a reluctance to re-engage, maybe afraid of what they'll find or how they'll be seen. Talk to them for a moment. Give them a word of encouragement.
I would say, like, again, you know, no one is ever too far away. That is, you know, a lie from the enemy, that he wants to convince you to not pursue that love and healing that awaits you. You know, whatever wounds you have, whatever vices you struggle with, nothing is too big, you know, for God. And once you believe that, you know, like I said, Jesus actually died for you as an individual, you will just be set free from, like I said, those negative thoughts, those things, those chains that are holding you down and trying to hold you back. You know, and just, like I said, just let all those thoughts, those horrible wrong ways of thinking or like lies, just let all that go and pursue him, because he's always waiting. And the love and, like I said, healing you'll experience is just beyond anything you could ever imagine. And everything that's waiting for you is better than you could ever imagine.
Right. You mentioned that you and your father are sort of twin restless hearts, right? And he was, because of his experience, he was able to then comfort you. Bring us to the present now. Talk a little bit about, you know, given your story and your reversion and your healing, now the ways in your marriage, in your motherhood, and in your work that you're now able to turn around and share that with others.
I feel like it's just almost like a flame that has just been ignited. And so it just encompasses everything, you know. My dad pretty much calls, I talk to my parents all the time, but my dad definitely called me like through his break, and we'll be sending each other videos about the faith, sermons, articles. I feel like you said, it's like those twin hearts that are just, you know, super passionate. And so it just, like I said, overflows into everything. And I am grateful, you know, that I have that, because, you know, family get-togethers, we can sit down and we can talk and we can share in the faith. And I know not all families are like that. And it really is a blessing that we can talk about the faith, you know, both the beauty of it and then, you know, the heavy hitting things, you know, that we're going through, struggles that we're having, or, you know, if there's problems in the family that, you know, we're texting each other, you know, pray for so-and-so because, you know, they really need it. And we're like, okay, we'll pray rosary, or we'll, you know, offer a mass, or, you know, whatever. And it's great to have, because like I said, I know not all families are like that. Mm-hmm. So it really is a gift. That, you know, like I said, my dad came back home, that I came back home, and that we can share in that beauty together as a family.
You are an artist and a craftswoman. you talk about beauty and about some of the things that you make.
I think that is definitely, I'm really passionate about that. I make wall rosaries. And a lot of them are made out of handmade felt flowers. Our Lady has really been there for me. Like I said, I would see Our Lady of Guadalupe everywhere. And I feel like she definitely was watching out for me. And like I said, seeing it culturally, I really didn't put two and two together until it was many years later. It was actually when I realized I was pregnant with my daughter. And I was kind of panicking because at the time I had some health problems, and financially we were like struggling, and we were renting a house, you know, we hadn't bought a house yet. And like I said, this was my third pregnancy, and I was just, you know, worried about all these different things. And I called my sister. I didn't even call my husband first. I called my sister, and she was like, "Do you realize what today's feast day is?" And I was like, "No." And she was like, "It's Our Lady of Guadalupe." And I was like, "Oh my gosh." It like literally the day I find out I'm pregnant. And so at that point, I really realized that she was my mother. And I feel like, you know, she was really taking me under her mantle. Unfortunately, like I said, I really didn't, you know, put that together for several years. But once I did, I was, you know, became very passionate about the rosary. And like I said, that carries over into my business and a lot of the things that I do. Like I make rosaries for the home. I make rosaries for children. I make rosary. It just really trying to reiterate the beauty of the rosary and how she is there waiting for us to embrace her as our mother.
The rosary is such a wonderful devotion. Again, if there are those listening that haven't dug into it, I encourage them to do so. So even if they're coming from non-Catholic backgrounds, recognizing how scriptural it is and how,
yes.
I think one of the things that is important to me is it's a devotion that brings together things that sometimes remain disparate in our Christian faith, which sort of our spirit over here, our body, right? No, we're whole human beings. And so we come into this devotional meditation on the incarnation, the actual physical life of our Lord through the eyes of Our Lady. We have the tactile of the beads as we're spending this time with God.
Yes.
It's a whole really integrated prayer.
Yeah. And I feel like my favorite, like you said, kind of the talking about scripture and how people don't realize how biblically based it is. My favorite quote from Father Calloway, he says the Bible is, or the rosary is the Bible on a set of beads. Uh-huh. When you pray, you're praying the word of God. Yeah. And that is probably like one of my favorite quotes. It really just encompasses everything. And it's just, it's a beautiful devotion. My husband and I make sure we pray our rosaries and pray with our children. And so, like I said, I think that's just what I'm really passionate about and is, you know, making those items, not just for the home, but for families to use to encourage that family rosary and encourage, you know, children to learn about, you know, the rosary and how important it is.
We have just a few minutes left. And so let's take a few minutes and just talk. Again, if we go back to the beginning of your story, you had a pretty good upbringing, childhood, a lot of Catholicism around you. Can we give some advice and encouragement to parents who are raising their kids in the faith and they want to give them the best start possible? What are some things that they can do to share the faith with their kids and the practice of the faith with their kids?
Well, like I said, the rosary.
Yeah, big one.
even if it's just learning the Hail Mary, it's just starting out, learning a Hail Mary, praying together as a family. I think that's really important too. And teaching, you know, like I said, our children that, you know, it's not just on Sundays, you know, our faith is an everyday part of our lives. You know, our pursuit and love for Jesus is an everyday thing. It's not just, you know, going to Mass or going to Catholic school or, you know, it's more than that. And we have to show them by our own example, you know, how, you know, are we, you know, like I said, teaching them prayers? Are we praying in front of them? Do they see us, you know, praying out? Do they see us making church and, you know, teach the teachings of the faith? Do they see us making that a priority or is it just kind of on the back burner? I know, like I said, just growing up and not going to Mass and stuff like that, that's kind of stuff I grew up seeing. So, you know, when I became older, I really didn't think it was a big deal and didn't understand the commandments and you know, our obligation as Catholics. So, yeah, I think just like I said, being that example, making sure we're teaching them the faith, you know, from the beginning, of course, age appropriate. We're not going to go into big theological, you know, things at a very young age, but just, you know, like I said, planting those seeds, making sure it's a part of everyday life. I think that's really important.
There's a priest on recently who made the point, and it comes into my mind during your testimony, which is that we have to make sure our kids know the connection between Catholicism and their ultimate happiness, right? And we talked about this earlier, right? That if they don't through their Christian education see the connection between why do we do this is because we're called to this, and our only ultimate happiness is in Christ, and that's why we're Catholic. They don't see that, and so that's certainly we tell them that, but then they also have to see it in us, and it's clear that you have a joy in your faith that I'm sure that is impactful to your kids.
Yes, I try. Try really hard.
Well, thank you so much, Alicia, for sharing your story and for your work and for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. And thank you for joining us for this episode of the Journey Home program. I want to, you know, remind you, you know, that wherever you are on your particular spiritual journey, as Alicia said, you're never too far from Christ. He loves you. He wants to welcome you home. I've been thinking recently about the fact that sometimes we're tempted to think that when we sin, maybe God will stop forgiving us. I've sinned too many times or too big. He'll never stop forgiving the repentant. He loves you. The danger of sin is that you might get tired of saying, I'm sorry. Don't get tired of saying you're sorry. Run back to the Father. He loves you. He wants to welcome you home. And And if you're on that journey, somewhere along that journey, please check out chnetwork.org. We'd love to be praying for you and answering any questions you have and trying to encourage you and walking with you as that journey continues. So check that out at chnetwork.org. There's also many additional stories there, like Alicia's, as well, to be an inspiration to you. So check that out. And again, we'll be back next week here on EWTN on the Journey Home program to share another story with you. God bless you. I'll see you then.